Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National People Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, the home of free speech. It is republicbroadcasting.org. It's where you go. Go to there, you click on the donate button, you send shekels, you keep free speech alive, because free speech is dying all over the place. It's really dying all over the place. Day after day, we're coming to you with stories about, how we're losing free speech here, we're losing free speech there. There's good information. Check out Jason Kessler's Twitter feed if you can figure out how to do that. Good information on the Charlottesville judge is shutting down free speech in Charlottesville. I bet if you go to nationaljustice.com, national-justice.com, Eric Stryker's probably got a piece up there. Probably does. Go there. Go to dailystormer.su, dailystormer.su, and read about the this weird Fed front called Boom. It's called Adam Waffen / the base. Some weird satanic death cult that has been infiltrated by the FBI, and they're using that to silence. Take away our rights and call all, you know, pro-white activists the same as ISIS. It's going on all over the place. Also, go to nationalbugle.com. You'll see all sorts of relevant articles that Mark Dankoff in particular and myself as well put up there. And you'll also be able to download the Co-Certified app. And the Co-Certified app, it's not just for keeping kosher anymore. And it's not just for a non-kosher certified lifestyle anymore. It's the way forward. We are losing free speech. We're being deplatformed in place after place. This type of thing, like Co-Certified, is an important backup that we are going to need. So download the Co-Certified app. $2.99. You're not going to spend a better $2.99 anywhere. Today, I want to do a bit of a deep dive into the delegates, into the possibility. You're hearing people talk about possibility of a brokered convention. I want to just go into, and maybe not for the whole show, but we'll see. I want to go into the history of the Democratic and Republican nominating conventions, and why we haven't had brokered conventions in most of our lifetimes, unless you're pretty old. Well, I mean, you wouldn't remember it. The last one was 1952. That was Republicans. For the Democrats, I think the last one was 1924. You probably don't remember that one. So I want to get into that. Okay, well, let's take it from the beginning of time. The Big Bang. No, we'll take it from the beginning of our republic. So as you know, the Constitution doesn't say anything about political parties. And George Washington didn't like political parties. But within the Washington cabinet, factions evolved. You had a Alexander Hamilton-led faction and a Thomas Jefferson-led faction. And the Hamilton-led faction, which included John Adams as well, became known as the Federalists. And I don't know how much party structure, the formal party structure they ever got, but they were the Federalists. The Jefferson-led faction became the Democratic Republicans, and they did evolve party structures, and eventually, especially after the death of Alexander Hamilton, and the Federalists kind of gradually disintegrated. America in the 18-teens and 1820s actually was a one-party country. It was a one-party country. And the whoever the Democratic Republican nominee for president was going to be automatically elected president. Well, I mean, Jefferson was a little bit earlier than that. He was elected in 1800. It was very contested. He was re-elected in 1804. But by 1808 and 1812, those were the elections that James Madison won. The competition was pretty sparse. And then by the time James Monroe was elected in 1816 and then in 1820, he won every state. He won every state. One elector just decided to vote against Monroe simply because he thought only George Washington should have the honor of being elected unanimously. And so Monroe otherwise would have been elected unanimously, except for this one elector who just wanted to leave that honor only to George Washington. So you had a one-party state. How did the Democratic Republicans choose their candidate? It was the congressional delegation. So the congressman would decide, the Democratic Republican congressman would decide who their presidential nominee was. It all came to a screeching halt in 1824 because factions within the one party emerged, and so you had four different candidates vying. John Quincy Adams, who was the son of the only Federalist president, John Adams, he was a Democratic Republican, and he had, you know, more central government leanings. And Andrew Jackson, who was a war hero, and he was favored in the regions and more of a Jeffersonian in a lot of ways, and a couple other, Crawford, and who was the fourth guy? Clay. They vied for it, and in the end, there was no candidate got the electoral majority, and so you had although the plurality was won by Jackson, but it went to Congress, according to the Constitution, it went to Congress to decide. It's one of those cases where you didn't have an electoral majority, electoral college majority, one of two cases where it went to Congress to decide. And the Congress picked the second place finisher, John Quincy Adams. So then after that, Andrew Jackson starts his own party, a formal party, which has become known as the Democrats. So it was an offshoot of the Democratic Republicans, the Democrats. If you look in history books during Jackson's presidency, they may refer to it as Jacksonian Democrats, but it's the Democrat Party. And, of course, Jackson was their nominee. Now, the national conventions to select a nominee, that was actually started by the Anti-Masonic Party. And they came together, and they met in 1831 and selected William Wirt as their candidate. And he went on to do pretty well. He won Vermont, which at the time had 7 electoral votes, so he did pretty well. And the next year, the Democrats, under Andrew Jackson, followed the same procedure in order to select Andrew Jackson to be their standard bearer. But they stuck to the national conventions. In 1836, they selected Vice President Martin Van Buren, to be the next candidate, and he won his election. He was a one-termer. When the Republicans formed in 1854, they adopted this same national convention format for nominating presidential candidates. Now, how are the delegates selected? Well, the delegates were selected by state committees who had big meetings, and typically, you would have local meetings who would select representatives to go to state meetings, or, you know, regional meetings, eventually to state meetings, and they would select the delegates. And this is basically the caucus process. Different rules have been used, and even today, not all caucus states use the same rules. They can use very, very different rules. And especially early on, this process tended to be dominated by party bosses. So you might have an elected official, a governor or a senator, who is very powerful and basically ran the state party, or it might be a boss behind the scenes. But so you had party bosses who were in control of their own states, and then at the national conventions, these various state delegations would duke it out. And here's the key: you had a 2/3 rule that was in effect. You needed 2/3 of the delegates to be nominated. At least that was the case in the Democratic Party. It had it all the way until 1936. It was abolished in 36. The Republicans didn't have it, but the Democrats had it, and it made it difficult to reach a 2/3 majority. So you had a lot of these conventions where you went to multiple ballots. So in fact, if you look at the conventions during that period, most of them went to multiple ballots. Sometimes you're only talking about 2 ballots or 4 ballots or 5 ballots, but you've got, when in 1852, Franklin Pierce was nominated on the 49th ballot. Douglas, of the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates, on the 59th ballot. Woodrow Wilson in 1912 on the 46th ballot, and then Davis in 1924 on the 103rd ballot. The Republicans didn't have as much of a problem with it, but James A. Garfield nominated on the 36th ballot. So part of, especially in the Democrats, the part of the reason was that 2/3 rule. But the other thing was that typically you had the party bosses who were coming to the conventions with their own state under control. They were often going into the first ballot, and they were voting for favorite sons or something like that. Favorite son, somebody from their own state. The other thing you had, it was called the unit rule. And now the unit rule it came under a lot of fire from time to time, and wasn't necessarily universally applied. But it gave power to the bosses, and so it was another aspect of why you had so many contested conventions, so many brokered conventions, conventions that went multiple ballots, because under the unit rule, the states, if the majority of the delegates in a state wanted to vote a certain way, then all of the votes had to be cast that way. So that would mean that not only did the party bosses control the bulk of the delegates in their states, no, they controlled them all because of the unit rule. And that got, for the most part, that was gotten rid of in 1936. But in 1972, this was a big issue because the California primary in 1972, the Democratic primary, was run, and it was a winner-take-all. So you have had this, you know, winner-take-all aspects of primaries since then. And it was George McGovern wound up winning it. I think Humphrey thought he was going to win it, but George McGovern won it. And then after the fact, there was a big fight at the Democratic National Convention whether those delegates should be freed or whether they should be bound, all of them bound under the winner-take-all rule to vote for George McGovern. And in the end, they voted for George McGovern. But so I'm getting to this history because you had different rules in effect during the era that you had these brokered conventions. And since 1936 in the Democratic Party, because different parties can have different rules, different states can have different rules, but since we're looking at the Democratic Party, so we're not really going to focus on the Republican Party now. Since 1936, you haven't had any conventions that went past the first ballot. So you had those two aspects, the 2/3 rule, the unit rule, that tended to lend themselves to these brokered conventions, and you had a whole bunch of brokered conventions. Now, another phenomenon started was in first decade of the 20th century, a variety of states started reforming the caucus system, and in 1912 you had a dozen states that held presidential primaries. The number grew pretty rapidly, but then in the 1920s, the party bosses got more control back, and so the number stayed in the mid-teens of number of states who had these primaries up until the 1960s. 1968, the Democrats only had 17 states with presidential primaries, and some were beauty contest. New Jersey was a beauty contest. It was won by the beautiful Shirley Chisholm, who was a black lady from Jamaica. I guess she was born in America. She must have been born in America, but she was of Jamaican extraction. The delegates weren't at stake there, so it really didn't matter. Hubert Humphrey got all the delegates, but Shirley Chisholm won the primary. So some primaries weren't binding. It was just a means of the public showing their preferences. And the delegates were actually selected through a caucus system. So you've had that. I know Virginia, as recently as 1988, had that kind of hybrid system where they had caucuses and primaries together. So the primaries, though, did play a useful role in a candidate demonstrating its electoral support in such-and-such region and such-and-such demographic. So it was important for John F. Kennedy to compete in the West Virginia primary, because West Virginia had no Catholics, virtually no Catholics, and to show that he could do well among non-Catholic voters. And so They had kind of a demonstration purpose. The purpose of the primaries, of entering primaries in the early to mid-20th century, wasn't to accumulate delegates. It was to demonstrate your electability. In 1968, when you had a fiercely contested primary race where Eugene McCarthy entered primaries and won but came in a very strong second place to incumbent President Johnson, that was enough to let Johnson know that he didn't really have much of a future, and he dropped out. And then you had a hotly contested race between Eugene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy, who opportunistically entered the race after Johnson dropped out. Eugene McCarthy had originally urged Kennedy to run. Kennedy wouldn't run against Johnson until after he dropped out. But he had a hotly contested race, and then when Kennedy was assassinated on the evening of the California primary, where he had just given his victory speech, he had won the California primary and, you know, was headed off to the Chicago convention. It wasn't a lock. It wasn't a lock, because remember, the primaries, there was only 17 states that had primaries, and so he didn't have a lock on it, and McCarthy had done well, too. They both had their share of delegates, and then there was a whole bunch of delegates that were controlled by party bosses. And when they got to the convention, George McGovern had entered the race and wound up being a receptacle for a lot of Bobby Kennedy's delegates. Eugene McCarthy had his delegates, but the party bosses didn't want either. And they selected Vice President Hubert Humphrey, the pro-war vice president, in spite of the fact he hadn't entered any primaries. It wound up being a pretty close race, but he lost. He was behind the whole time in the polls to Nixon, caught up towards the end, but not quite enough, and he lost. And as a result, the Democratic Party decided they were going to reform, and we'll get to that right after the break.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Investigating the Democratic conventions and the primaries, and because we've got South Carolina primary coming up on Saturday and Super Tuesday on this Tuesday of next week, let's know what to expect. So after the 1968 debacle, the Democrats decided that they needed to revise and reform their nominating system because there had been so much chaos. It wasn't just that Humphrey had lost, but that you had rioting in the streets, a lot of heavy-handed tactics. Mayor Daley of Chicago had the police, arresting lots of people. The McCarthy delegates complained that they were kept out of the convention by police. So there was a lot of chaos, and it was a disaster for the Democrats. So they had a commission. And George McGovern was the head of the commission to recommend new rules. And, of course, then he eventually decided he was going to run for president in 72 himself. So he quit as head of the commission and was replaced by some guy named Frazier. It was actually him who rewrote the rules. So you wound up with about twice as many states having meaningful primaries, a lot more primaries. But also, the caucus rules had been revised in such a way as to make them more responsive to the grassroots members and less dominated by party bosses. And when you got to the 1972 primaries, you had, the initial favorite, the initial front runner had been Edmund Muskie, who had been a senator from Maine, and he had been Humphrey's vice presidential running mate in 68. But he had, some problems at the beginning of the campaign, including allegations made against his wife, and he gave a press conference in the snow where he was a bit emotional in denying these allegations against his wife, and the snow was landing on his face, and it looked like tears, and people were saying, oh, he's a crybaby. We can't have a crybaby be president, and so that among some other things, but that led to him fading away, and you had basically a three-way race. There were other candidates, but you had a pretty tight three-way race between these three leaders, George McGovern, George Wallace, and Hubert Humphrey. And it was really pretty closely divided in terms of the number of primaries won and the number of votes cast. It was pretty even. But George McGovern had two advantages. He had two advantages. One was he won the California primary I mentioned earlier, which was using a unit rule where it was winner take all. And that's the biggest state, and he won it. So that was a big advantage. The other advantage he had was he was snatching up delegates in the caucus states. Why? Because he knew the rules. He had written the rules. And so he was doing a lot better in the caucus states. He was a lot better organized to win delegates under the new rules. So you didn't have a brokered convention, even though you didn't have anybody in the primaries who was winning a majority. But because of the strength of the McGovern's wins in caucus states, and also because of the unit rule in California, so he came out ahead. Now, since 72, you have had a couple of years where people thought, oh, we might have a brokered convention. It might go past the first ballot. Nothing's gone past the first ballot in the Democrats since 24 and the Republicans since 52. But you've had a couple of close calls where people were expecting this might happen. And the closest one probably would have been the Republicans in 1976, where you had very, very even two-way race between Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan. But because it was a two-way race and nobody else was winning delegates, just a slight edge by Ford was enough. In 1984, you had a close race in the Democratic Party between former Vice President Mondale and Senator Gary Hart. But you also had in that race, you had some other candidates who didn't do too well, but one who did pretty well was Jesse Jackson, and he won a few largely black states like Louisiana and South Carolina, and he had a chunk of delegates. But by then, you also had this super delegate rule. This is something unique to the Democratic Party, where you had, and this was in the wake of 1980, the 1980 convention, superdelegates who don't have to be elected. They're not selected through a caucus process or through a primary process, but simply by their office. They are congressmen, governors, or National Committee members of the Democratic Party. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
How would you like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
Sayonara, Lopato Kamisaki.
Is that the rules keep getting changed. You know, the party loses. And today we're really looking at the Democrats. The Democrats, they lose elections, have debacles, and they look back and say, well, what did we do wrong? How can we win elections next time? And so after 68, the McGovern-Fraser rules made it so that the rank and file of the Democratic Party would have more influence in selecting the nominee. Well, in 72, they chose George McGovern, big surprise, and then he wound up losing 49 states, not exactly what they were hoping for. In 1976, an outsider, somebody who was certainly not favored by the establishment, Jimmy Carter, won. There are reasons there. Part of it is the establishment also didn't want George Wallace, and they were for, at least early in the process, kind of using Jimmy Carter as a bulwark against George Wallace, whom they really didn't want. But then Jimmy Carter wound up getting too much momentum, and couldn't be stopped, and wound up with the nomination, wound up winning the election. He was an outsider, didn't have the most successful presidency. There's some things you could point to, but wound up losing in pretty significant landslide to Ronald Reagan in 1980. So after 1980, looking back at two out of the past three elections being pretty bad electoral landslides, with the Democrats on the losing end, the establishment thought we want to get some control back. And so rather than scrapping the McGovern-Frazier rules, what they did is they left those in place, but then they added extra delegates. So delegates who don't get selected through by the voters, who are there ex officio by virtue of the offices they hold, either public elected offices or party offices. You know, every state has its national committee members that it sends to the national committee. And so 1984 was the first time that you had these super delegates, and I think how many was it in 84? I'd say there were a few hundred. It wasn't all of the members of Congress. It was about 60% of the members of Congress. It was the each state, there's 50 states, and each state sent its chairman and vice chairman. So that's 100 there. About 60% of the Democrats were in the majority there. And then there were some other seats that were left over for big city mayors and whatnot. So yeah, maybe 400. Now the thing is, had there not been super delegates, given that Jesse Jackson had won a fair number of delegates, enough delegates, Walter Mondale would not have had the 50% majority that he needed, 50% plus one, to win on the first ballot. But because of those super delegates who were pro-establishment by nature, and Mondale was the establishment candidate, he was able to secure the nomination on the first ballot. So that the superdelegates really came into play there, because it was, especially with Gary Hart having won the California primary, which was, until recently, it was the last primary. The last day they had primaries was in June in California, and I think New Jersey and New Mexico, another state, would finish up the primary season. So he won with the superdelegates, and then in 1988 they doubled the number of superdelegates. So there are a lot of superdelegates, and they got the vote in the first round. In 1988 the election was pretty even between Jesse Jackson and Michael Dukakis up until about the New York primary. It was pretty even. Al Gore was in there, and Dick Gephardt had a few. But everybody knew that the establishment, those 700 or 800 superdelegates, they weren't going for Jesse Jackson. Jesse Jackson, I think, won Ernest Hollings, who was a senator from South Carolina. And you know, I'm sure a former segregationist, but he was the only one I remember who had actually pledged for Jesse Jackson. There might have been a few others, but he was the only high-profile one who had pledged for Jesse Jackson. Why? Because Jesse Jackson won his state of South Carolina. And what the heck? Jesse Jackson wasn't going to win the nomination anyway. So they didn't play that much of a part in it. We move forward. Were there any other really close elections? Well, I mean, it looked for a while, 4 years ago, like Ted Cruz, who had become, it wasn't originally the establishment favorite, but once Trump seemed to be running away with things, the establishment started getting behind Cruz, and it looked like through shenanigans they might be able to get enough people who were elected in process in states, in primaries and caucuses that had gone for Trump, but because of various rules and things, that they might be able to squeeze some of those Trump delegates onto the Cruz side. But it didn't work. Even 4 years ago, we always hear about Sanders having the nomination stolen from him by the establishment. But when you actually look at the number of votes cast, and even forgetting about the superdelegates, when you look at the number of votes cast, Hillary Clinton actually did beat Sanders. You could still make the case that Sanders had things stolen from him because the DNC was doing all sorts of other things behind the scenes to make it difficult for Sanders. But in terms of votes cast, he actually did come in second place. But that leads us up to now. We haven't had a brokered convention in most of our lifetimes. And for the Democratic convention, nobody's going to remember that. That was 1924. So could it happen this time? There's a couple of things people point to. One is that the superdelegates this time around don't vote on the first ballot. Of course, the superdelegates would want a convention. They would want a brokered convention because the superdelegates tend to be establishment people, and the establishment people don't like Bernie Sanders. Superdelegates will be at the convention, and if it goes to a second round, then they do get to vote. Well, could it get to a second round? Well, one other thing that's different this year is California, which had always been a June primary, has been moved up, and it is now a Super Tuesday primary. So Super Tuesday is not just Super Tuesday. The original Super Tuesday was in 1984, and it was just, I don't know, half dozen states voting the same day. Then it got bigger in 88. Now this is Super Duper Tuesday. There's so many states, and especially having California and Texas voting on Super Tuesday, that you're having a, 37% or whatever of the delegates apportioned when you still have multiple people on the ballot. Now, on the surface of it, you'd say, okay, well, when there's still all of these candidates, you're going to be dividing up so many delegates when there's still all of these candidates on the ballot that it's going to be hard for anybody to get to the to get that big lead that they're going to need in order to achieve the magic number of a majority of delegates. It could be true, but here's the thing. You look at, let's just take California, for instance. How are the delegates apportioned? Well, 25% are going to be based on the statewide vote. 25%. And so if Sanders is getting 30% of the vote, and then his main opponents are dividing up the rest with like 10 to 15%, well, actually, you do have to get 15% to be viable. But let's just say, Sanders gets 30% and Biden and Bloomberg, I don't think Biden's going to do well, but let's just, for the argument's sake, they get 20% each. Well, then the three of them get to divide it up. Sanders would get the lion's share, but not the majority. But here's the thing. At the rest of the delegates, 75%, are going to be divided up at a district-by-district level, right? Now, Sanders, who's out in front, he's got a significant lead in California, he is going to be viable, presumably, in every single one of their, 51 congressional districts. He'll have a share in all of them. In a lot of those places, some of those places, maybe nobody else is going to be viable, but some of those places, maybe Bloomberg will be viable in one place and Biden will be viable in another. But Sanders could go into California, and you could say the same for Texas or other places, with 30% of the votes, he could come out with 60% of the delegates, because so many candidates aren't going to be viable. There's so many candidates that second and third place finishers aren't even necessarily going to be getting 15%. If you look at Iowa, for instance, in Iowa, you had four candidates get 15%, although a couple of them just barely. In New Hampshire, you only had three candidates get 15%. Well, here's one other thing, though. California, you've got two new candidates who are going to be dividing up the anti-Biden vote. Bloomberg with his massive number, his massive ads, but also Steyer, who's got deep pockets, and so they're going to be dividing it up even more. In most of these congressional districts, you're only going to have Sanders and maybe one other person who are viable. So I think Sanders is going to walk away with the vast majority of delegates. Now, okay, so we're talking about whether there's going to be a brokered convention, which depends on, is anybody going to get a majority of the delegates on the first round? And right now, Sanders is in a really, really good position. Is he a lock on it? Not necessarily. And if you're looking forward to Super Tuesday, Klobuchar is running, actually, in the polls ahead of Sanders in Minnesota, and so she might be able to claim that. She might. I have the feeling Klobuchar might become the John Kasich of 2020. John Kasich, who won his home state of Ohio and then just got like creamed everywhere else, but stayed in it all the way up to the convention, thinking that, well, you know, if there's a brokered convention, I will be able to stand in. You know, and the other similarity between Kasich and Klobuchar is they're both very gross individuals and have poor hygiene and are extremely unattractive. So Klobuchar might win that and be able to hang around. I think Bernie is going to win the bulk of the states. Could Biden win South Carolina, which is not Super Tuesday, it's on Saturday? Right now he's ahead in the polls, and the odds makers in Las Vegas seem to think he's going to win, although the odds are starting to narrow somewhat. I have been saying all along, I don't think Joe Biden will ever win a primary in his entire life, and I stick to it. Even though he's ahead in the polls a couple days before the election, and you know it's a 60% black electorate, if he does win, it might give him a little bit of a second wind going into Super Tuesday, and maybe he'll do a little bit better, and maybe he'll come out with some delegates. And of course, if Biden and Bloomberg are able to get enough delegates, you could have a scenario where Sanders doesn't have the 50%. At this point, you know, we'll have to see what happens on Super Tuesday. But if on Super Tuesday, I mean, so I'm not saying I know what's going to happen. But what I am saying is that there is a scenario where Sanders, even getting 30% of the vote, 30% of the vote in places like California and Texas, is going to walk away with a huge amount of delegates, the bulk of the delegates, 60%. It could happen. He's the front runner, and even if it narrows to, you know, a Bloomberg versus Biden race or something like that, even if the field narrows, in these head-to-head contests that you get late in the primary season, where you've got only two people or two and a half people, you know, like Kasich was a half a person, and back in 1984, Jesse Jackson was half a person. Not three-fifths of a person, by the way, half a person. When you get into those, and in 88, it was, two-man race between Jesse Jackson and Michael Dukakis. And when you get these two-man race, then one can run away with it. And so I think that's the most likely scenario, is Sanders winds up running away with it. But what if he doesn't? What happens if you get to the convention and he doesn't have that majority on the first ballot? Well, then what happens is you go to a second ballot for the first time in the Democratic Party in almost a century. You get to that second ballot. All of a sudden, you've got 771 superdelegates who weren't allowed to vote on the first ballot, but now they can vote. And they are anti-Sanders. And there you get into all sorts of craziness. One other scenario, though, is the Democratic, like the Rules Committee, because the conventions have these three committees. They have a Credentials Committee that gets to say who is a delegate, who comes in, what non-delegates can enter the convention. They give out credentials. You have the Platform Committee, which drafts the platform of the party, which can be ignored by the candidate, but typically it's dominated by the candidate, the platform. And then you have the Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee could change the rules and say, guess what, on the first round of voting, the superdelegates are going to vote. It could happen. This type of thing, you know, when you have these tight races, like I said, 1972, where they were trying to get the Rules Committee to end the unit rule for California so that McGovern wouldn't win. Ronald Reagan was trying to get the Rules Committees to change things in 76. These things can happen. It could happen. All right, we've got one more segment coming back, and we'll wrap it up.
とてもきれいね横浜ブルーライト横浜。
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party. And the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future. Okay, we are back. So what if it goes to a second round? If we go to a second round, if either Sanders doesn't walk in with a majority of the votes won in primaries and caucuses, or if the Rules Committee lets superdelegates vote on the first round, which they used to be able to do. Every convention since 1984, they could. But after the complaints from the Sanders side about the unfairness of the process 4 years ago, now they're not allowed to vote. They can sit on the floor, but they can't vote on the first round. So if they were allowed to vote on the first round, it could take it into a second round. What happens in the second round? What happens in the second round is all of the delegates are free to vote their conscience. They can vote any way they want. So on the first round, if you're running for trying to be a Sanders delegate in a primary, you wind up having to sign an oath saying that you will support him on the first round. You're free on the second round to vote for anybody, so you can get all sorts of horse trading. And this, if they get to a second round, this is where you can get somebody, a Hillary Clinton, for instance, which would be completely retarded. I know people talk about it, but the idea that Hillary Clinton could go into a rematch with Donald Reagan, whatever his name is, and win, I mean, that's the definition of insanity, where you keep trying the same thing over and over, even though it doesn't work. But you could get Oprah Winfrey or Michelle Obama, all sorts of things could happen. Or you, Pete Buttigieg. You know who Pete Buttigieg reminds me of? He reminds me of Emmanuel Macron, the French president. I think he's astroturfed. He is from, you know, the world of finance, and well, he's from McKinsey. I guess where was Macron from? I want to say Goldman Sachs, but I don't think so. But he's some sort of banker. So that's where it all becomes interesting. I think it would be a disaster. And if Sanders was to go in there with, you know, 48% or so, just shy of 50% of what was needed, but with a lot of momentum, and then he winds up not getting the nomination, you know, it's going to be a massive disaster for the Democrats. And you've got to think a lot of them know it. So, okay. Well, I hope this was interesting for you. So we're going to see. I had been saying it's going to be a race between Sanders and Bloomberg, and Bloomberg could still pull it out because he's got a lot of money. And I'm not saying that Sanders is going to win, you know, sweep all of the Super Tuesday states. But he could come out with a huge amount of momentum, or maybe, you know, Biden will do better than I think, and maybe Klobuchar will win Minnesota, and maybe Bloomberg will come out and with a lot of strong seconds, and maybe a win somewhere, and who knows? All right. Well, I hope you enjoy it, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of Master Beaver Radio.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Truth.